Hello, this is Chris with the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, October 8th. We'll begin today's reading on the front page, Beautiful Effort. See You at Work initiative creates paid opportunity to help clean up the city, from Champaign. There's a lot separating Albuquerque, New Mexico and Champaign-Urbana, but now the homeless in both places have something in common. They're able to work for $10 an hour beautifying their cities. Inspired by There's a Better Way, an initiative on tackling homelessness started in the New Mexico City, City of Champaign Township Supervisor Andy Quarnstrom thought something similar could be a good fit here. Essentially, what they were doing is they take homeless individuals and put them to work doing municipal beautification projects, Quarnstrom said of Albuquerque's program. There, it's taking care of trash and tumbleweeds, but they provide them with cash at the end of the workday. Quarnstrom, with a staff of just three, said he saw the need for assistance to homeless people in town and decided to partner with See You at Home to launch the See You at Work initiative. The program is funded by the township, but administered by See You at Home. See You at Work participants, accompanied by a truck packed with tools, are paid to walk the streets picking up trash for 4 hours a day. After their work concludes for the day, they receive a meal. Tim Stanger, 62, who has been participating in See You at Work since it began in August, said he's hooked. He said he'd do it just for the Jimmy John's sandwich at the end of the shift, or even for free. We're helping Champaign, and that's all I care about. All I'm doing is trying to make it look a little better. I didn't do it last week just to get some rotation and more people involved, but I came in just in case they needed me. Stanger said he hopes the program continues to expand and that trash pickup extends to downtown Champaign as well as the parks. He said he also wishes there'd be more of a focus on the entrance to campus town via Green Street in Champaign. They spent all this money on this beautiful sign, and then there's bottles and trash all over the place. The program is a way to help some of the most vulnerable people in the community. It provides them with income they otherwise wouldn't have, giving them a feeling of dignity and responsibility. And with a captive audience, the township and See You at Home are able to offer casework to those who participate. If you need help for finding housing, or SNAP benefits, or whatever the help may be, we say here's your options. Already, we're starting to build those relationships, and over time, hopefully, we'll change the stigma on homelessness and panhandlers. They're doing something good for the community, and they're working. Originally, the goal was to have 5 people one day each week participate in the program, but Quarnstrom said he quickly realized the need was much bigger. It's all that we were sure we'd be able to handle in terms of logistics and the financials. The first 2 weeks we worked with 5 people but had other people waiting. And then we had 11 and 10 about a month in with even more people waiting. We're managing the best we can, but it is growing in popularity. The program is in the pilot phase now and will stay that way for another year. Quarnstrom said he wants private donors, businesses, and anyone willing to help to support the program and spread out the financial burden. My goal is to show that it works, is to show that it's successful, and to show that there's hope and that we'll fully and hopefully get other people involved. Rob Dahlhaus, executive director of See You at Home, said he doesn't want to grow the program too much at this time given the limited resources available. I wouldn't want it to grow too big and overwhelm us. I want to keep it about this size, 10 or so people, and then change that down the road. But for him, the program should be an invitation for the community to take the time and speak with some of the people participating in See You at Work. When they see us out there, what I want them to do is go and talk to these guys. Get to know the folks on the street. Come and see what we do. And from those who served, obstacle and desert storm, dehydration. Heat, heavy gear posed unique battle, from Champaign. Edwin Cook was a desert storm medic working with an artillery company. Let's just say I got to use a lot of my training, he said. The longtime VFW post 5520 leader 51 went everywhere from Panama to Iraq in service that began in 1987. He played on Tommy Stewart's last football team at Champaign Central. Cook Revere Stewart, who still ranks among the 40 winningest coaches in state history. Cook's father, Ebby, is also a legend. After his own athletic career, he worked with the University of Illinois to attract minority athletes, along with brother Jerome and friend Bruce Nesbitt. The younger Cook wasn't ready to go back to school right after high school. I thought I'd choose a job that was right in the thick of it. Early in his Army career, he was attached to engineering and helped build roads in Panama, Honduras, Costa Rica, and Egypt. As a medic, his most intense experience was Desert Storm. That was really something for 5 or 6 months. The artillery unit was part of the Left Hook in General Norman Schwarzkopf's 6-week drive, Blitzkrieg, to liberate Kuwait from Iraqi occupation. The unit came up against Saddam Hussein's Republican Guard. They fought admirably, but they were just up against a superior force. Because his forces overwhelmed the enemy, Cook put in many IVs, but not for wounded soldiers. I started most of the IVs because it was so extremely hot and the soldiers were getting dehydrated. Soldiers had to wear full combat gear in temperatures as high as 122 degrees. Kevlar, ammo, weapons, supplies, if you sat down, somebody had to help you get back up. Of the few life-threatening wounds he had to treat, there was no equipment for cauterizing gaping wounds. You'd have to be right next to a MASH unit. One soldier was hit by a large caliber weapon. I don't think he had a chance, and I did what I could. There were no cell phones then, so soldiers communicated by pagers. If my pager went off, I had 1 hour to be back on the post. Cook said that at that time, upon his return, he did not feel psychic wounds. It's an odd thing to say, but your training allows you a quick turnaround. You get back to the same routine. Later, he trained medics at West Point. Cook came back to Champaign and worked for a couple of years in the lab at Carle. There were pagers there, too. He worked for a while with the Red Cross, but eventually perceived that he had PTSD. Cook got some help and wanted to help other soldiers. That's why the VFW is important to him, as well as its honor guard. Also on the front page, it's back to the bargaining table today. Before negotiations resume today, this time with the federal mediator on hand, members of the Champaign Federation of Teachers plan to rally at Unit 4's Mellon Administrative Center. Today's session marks the eighth time the two sides have sat down to negotiate a contract that ended on June 30th. The district says the teachers' union has rejected two proposals. CFT President Jen White says they didn't resolve several sticking points, which are sure to come up at today's rally. Among them, capping class sizes. Ideally, grades K through second would be limited to a certain number of students, but even just capping kindergarten alone would be a step in the right direction. Unit 4 doesn't currently have formal caps, so some kindergarten classes have 25 or more students in a room. Acknowledging continued growth, the district recently shelled out an extra $1 million for the reconstruction budget of Dr. Howard Elementary, making it a three-strand school. Home visits. An emphasis on relationships with our families that need serious attention is in the home visit structure part of the CFT's request. It was also a point of emphasis made earlier this year by backers of a proposed charter school on Champaign's North End. Both argue that home visits by teachers or administrators are essential to making sure all families, including those traditionally unresponsive to school phone, email outreach, are included in students' education. And finally, top-down approach. White has publicly decried the amount of work the district's educators are asked to do on top of teaching and interacting with students. CFT members say the proposed addition of two or more institute days to the Unit 4 calendar reiterates a top-down approach to education, which focuses more on professional development and less on spending time with students. Space available. With more end-of-life options than ever before, from cremations to natural burials, the demand for a cemetery plot is on the decline. Surrounded by athletic fields and campus buildings, Mount Hope Cemetery in Champaign has little room to expand. Yet its funeral director isn't worrying about one day running out of room, in part because the way we bury our loved ones is changing. In 2016, the cremation rate in America crossed 50%, up from 9.7% in 1980, according to the Cremation Association of North America. And in Illinois, 47% of those who died were cremated in 2016, according to the State Department of Public Health. Mount Hope, which has a mausoleum that's 85 to 90% full, is responding to the demand, adding columbaria, which are a bit like bookshelves to hold cremated remains. People are really starting to latch onto those because of the turn to cremation, said Stacy Wagner, a funeral director at Mittendorf Calvert, the funeral home in Mount Hope. Yet Mount Hope has another reason to not be too concerned. We're filling in old pathways and roadways, that kind of thing. There's a section in the cemetery that looks empty, but Mount Hope can't expand into that because it's used to be a old indigent burial ground for Champaign County. There are what you know to be thousands of burials there, and the records of who is there are somewhat minimal. When a previous owner of the cemetery took over long ago, Wagner said an agreement was made to no longer bury people in that section because we don't know exactly how many people are there. Like Mount Hope, other area cemeteries say they won't be running out of room anytime soon. We've got probably 150 years left, said Michael Kane, manager of Resurrection Catholic Cemetery in Danville. Half the cemetery isn't even plotted out. We've got plenty of room to grow, said Dave Short, a trustee for East Lawn Burial Park in Urbana. Cremations are taking over burials for a variety of reasons. They're generally much cheaper than traditional burials, but that's not necessarily the main reason people choose them, said Barbara Chemis, executive director of the Cremation Association. Consumers always point to price. A lot of that, we hypothesize, is not that the family doesn't have the money to spend. It's just that they don't see the value of a casket burial. They like cremation. She also said cremation can be more convenient, giving family members more time to return home. Cremation can allow a lengthening of the time frame for doing memorialization. And she said younger generations just aren't as tied to the traditions of previous generations. That's why cremation tends to be more popular in the western U.S., where many residents weren't born in the state they live in. Washington State, for example, has a cremation rate of 77%. Baby boomers increasingly want their death to reflect the life they live, so it tends toward a celebration of life versus a memorial service versus a funeral. So scattering ashes in a place that's meaningful and destination funerals to gather the family together one more time. Options that don't take place within a funeral home or cemetery. The shift toward cremation opened up a new line of business for Kelly Vault and Crematory in Champaign. It started as a burial vault company in 1923, and in 1983 it added its first crematory. Kelly now does cremations wholesale for many of the funeral homes in Champaign-Urbana. In 1983, the cremation rate was pretty much non-existent, said Rich Hare, the company's vice president. It's grown steadily over the years. In this area, especially with the University of Illinois, it's more of a transient society. Compared to shipping a full body, it's a lot more economical to be cremated. The company also makes headstones for pets and humans and granite countertops. Kelly makes fewer headstones than it used to, but an increase in cremations doesn't necessarily mean there will be less headstones needed. While some people simply receive the ashes and scatter them, others choose to bury the urn or place it in a columbarium. You can still have a visitation, you can still have a funeral, you can still be buried with cremation. When someone dies, the family has to wait at least 24 hours before the body can be cremated. It usually takes that long for the funeral home to get the required permits. The funeral home takes the body to the crematory and then picks up the cremated remains to give back to the family. Once it's cremated, the state of Illinois no longer views it as a human body, and you don't need a licensed funeral director present. With a full casketed burial, a licensed director has to be present. At Heath & Vaughn Funeral Home in Champaign, owner Chuck Vaughn estimates that at least 75% of his clients are cremated, and he said he has seen an increasing number of green or natural burials, where the body is placed in a biodegradable casket. It's an all-wood casket, no metal in it whatsoever. It's simplified, but also very elegant. He said that option is more popular on the West Coast, but it's slowly making its way east. Especially as we get younger folks into the market, I think it's going to be the future. But it can be difficult to find cemeteries that will accommodate you. There aren't that many. The move toward new methods reflects a shift in society. The cremation rate is expected to continue to rise, though chemists wonder how high it will get. That's what we're all waiting for. At some point, it's going to slow down. It's never going to be 100%. From the national page, it's official. Brett Kavanaugh sworn in as 114th Justice hours after winning Senate confirmation amid protests. From Washington, Brett Kavanaugh was sworn in Saturday night as the 114th Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court after a wrenching debate over sexual misconduct and judicial temperament that shattered the Senate, captivated the nation, and ushered in the acrimonious new level of polarization. Now encroaching on the court that the 53-year-old judge may well swing rightward for decades to come. Even as Kavanaugh took his oath of office in a quiet private ceremony not long after the narrowest Senate confirmation in nearly a century and a half, protesters chanted outside the court building across the street from the Capitol. The climactic 50-48 roll call capped a fight that seized the national conversation after claims emerged that he had sexually assaulted women 3 decades ago, allegations he emphatically denies. Those accusations transformed the clash from a routine struggle over judicial ideology into an angry jumble of questions about victims' rights, the presumption of innocence, and personal attacks on nominees. His confirmation provides a defining accomplishment for President Donald Trump and the Republican Party, which found a unifying force in the cause of putting a new conservative majority on the court. Before the sexual accusations grabbed the Senate's and the nation's attention, Democrats had argued that Kavanaugh's rulings and writings as an appeals court judge had raised serious concerns about his views on abortion rights and a president's right to bat away legal probes. Trump, flying to Kansas for a political rally, flashed a thumbs-up gesture when the tally was announced and praised Kavanaugh for being able to withstand this horrible, horrible attack by the Democrats. He later telephoned his congratulations to the new justice, then at the rally returned to his own attack of the Democrats as an angry left-wing mob. Like Trump, senators at the Capitol predicted voters would react strongly by defeating the other party's candidates in next month's congressional elections. "It's turned our base on fire," declared Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky. But Democratic leader Chuck Schumer of New York forecast gains for his party instead. "Change must come from where change in America always begins, the ballot box." The justices themselves made a quiet show of solidarity. Kavanaugh was sworn in by Chief Justice John Roberts, and the man he's replacing, retired Justice Anthony Kennedy, as fellow Justices Samuel Alito, Clarence Thomas, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and Elena Kagan, looked on, two conservatives and two liberals. Still, Kagan noted the night before that Kennedy has been a person who found the center, and it's not so clear we'll have that now. Noisy to the end, the Senate battle featured a call of the roll that was interrupted several times by protesters shouting in the spectators' gallery before Capitol Police removed them. Vice President Mike Pence presided, his potential tie-breaking vote unnecessary. Trump has now put his stamp on the court with his second justice in as many years. Yet Kavanaugh is joining under a cloud. Accusations from several women remain under scrutiny, and House Democrats have pledged further investigation if they win the majority in November. Outside groups are culling an unusually long paper trail from his previous government and political work, with the National Archives and Records Administration expected to release a cache of millions of documents later this month. Kavanaugh, father of two, strenuously denied the allegations of Christine Blasey Ford, who says he sexually assaulted her when they were in their teens. An appellate court judge on the District of Columbia Circuit for the past 12 years, he pushed for the Senate vote as hard as Republican leaders, not just to reach this capstone of his legal career, but in fighting to clear his name. After Ford's allegations, Democrats and their allies became engaged as seldom before, though there were obvious echoes of Thomas's combative confirmation over the sexual harassment accusations of Anita Hill, who worked for him at two federal agencies. Protesters began swarming Capitol Hill, creating a tense, confrontational atmosphere that put Capitol Police on edge. As exhausted senators prepared for Saturday's vote, some were flanked by security guards. Hangers and worse have been delivered to their offices, a Roe v. Wade reference. Some 164 people were arrested, most for demonstrating on the Capitol steps, 14 for disrupting the Senate's roll call vote. McConnell told the Associated Press in an interview that the mob of opposition confronting senators in the hallways and at their homes united his narrowly divided GOP majority as Kavanaugh's confirmation teetered and will give momentum to his party chances this fall. Beyond the sexual misconduct allegations, Democrats raised questions about Kavanaugh's temperament and impartiality after he delivered defiant, emotional testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee where he denounced their party. Schumer said Kavanaugh's partisan screed showed not only a temperament unfitting for the high court, but a lack of objectivity that should make him ineligible to serve. At one point in the hearing, Kavanaugh blamed a Clinton revenge conspiracy for the accusations against him. The fight ended up less about judicial views than the sexual assault accusations that riveted the nation and are certain to continue a national debate and Me Too reckoning that is yet to be resolved. Republicans argued that a supplemental FBI investigation instigated by wavering GOP senators and ordered by the White House turned up no corroborating witnesses to the claims that Kavanaugh had sterling credentials for the court. Democrats dismissed the truncated report as insufficient. In the end, all but one Republican, Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, lined up behind the judge. She said on the Senate floor late Friday that Kavanaugh is a good man, but his appearance of impropriety has become unavoidable. In a twist, Murkowski voted present Saturday as a courtesy to Republican Kavanaugh supporter Steve Daines, who was to walk his daughter down the aisle at her wedding in Montana. That balanced out the absence without affecting the outcome, and gave Kavanaugh the same two-vote margin he'd have received had both lawmakers voted. It was the closest roll call to confirm a justice since 1881, when Stanley Matthews was approved by 24-23. As the Senate tried to recover from its charged atmosphere, Murkowski's move offered a moment of civility. I do hope that it reminds us that we can take very small steps to be gracious with one another, and maybe those small gracious steps can lead to more. Republicans control the Senate by a meager 51-49 margin, and announcements of support Friday from Republicans Jeff Flake of Arizona and Susan Collins of Maine, along with Democrat Joe Manchin of West Virginia, locked in the needed votes. Manchin was the only Democrat to vote for Kavanaugh's confirmation. He expressed sympathy for the sexual assault victims, but said that after factoring in the FBI report, I have found Judge Kavanaugh to be a qualified jurist who will follow the Constitution. A procedural vote Friday made Saturday's confirmation a foregone conclusion. White House counsel Don McGahn, who helped salvage Kavanaugh's nomination as it teetered, sat in the front row of the visitors' gallery for the vote with Deputy White House Press Secretary Raj Shah. Senators on both sides know they have work to do to put the chamber back together again after a ferocious debate that saw them arguing over the sordid details of high school drinking games, sexual allegations, and cryptic yearbook entries. Senator John Croin of Texas said, "The Senate has been an embarrassment. We have a lot of work to do." From the business page, just ask him, what's the best time to make a pumpkin purchase? As long as you keep it dry, it shouldn't matter, said Mohammed Badabust, a crop sciences professor at the University of Illinois. You can buy any time, but you have to keep it dry. If you keep it dry, it could go for months. Similarly, Mitch Nagard of the Nagard Pumpkin Patch near Sydney said it to keep it dry and on a hard surface. If you can keep them dry and on a hard surface, that's probably your best bet. You should also wash your pumpkin as little as possible, maybe a little to remove dirt and soil, but heavy washing can remove the natural protective coat. And he said the pumpkin crop looks pretty good this year, so pumpkin patches shouldn't run out before Halloween. Some areas received more rain than they needed, which led to some disease, and some pumpkins ripened a little early. But overall, we're not going to be short in pumpkins. This year, we're anticipating to have enough to last us all year long, and so if you're a late pumpkin getter in the late part of October, we'll still have pumpkins, hopefully. I don't see us running out anytime soon. For canning pumpkins, a separate type used more for pumpkin pie filling has one of the best years on record, the best I've seen in 20 years. Pumpkin farmers have become much better in reducing diseases and increasing their yields. This year it's up to 38 pounds per acre, with the average expected to be around 27 to 28 pounds per acre. The average has been 23 to 24 pounds per acre in the past, but this year is very good. And from Grand Rapids, Michigan, doorstop valued at $100,000. A Michigan man recently learned that a rock he's been using as a doorstop is a meteorite worth $100,000. The nearly 23-pound hunk of iron and nickel is the sixth largest meteorite found in Michigan, according to the Smithsonian Museum and Central Michigan University. David Masaryk said he took his doorstop to the university for examination after seeing reports in January of meteorite pieces selling for thousands of dollars. I said, wait a minute, I wonder how much mine is worth. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Champaign News Gazette for Monday, October 8th. Please stay tuned.